Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here tonight to talk about the 2021 Ravens wide receivers in our positional review. Joining me to do it, Josh Reed. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing great, Ken. All things considered, you know, Ravens not in the playoffs, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we're going to have to go through these positional reviews no matter what. Talk about a season that obviously had a lot of downs, more downs than ups, frankly, and tell folks, first of all, where they can find your stuff online.
So I'm a contributor for Baltimore Beatdown, the SB Nation site covering the Baltimore Ravens. So you can find all my work there at BaltimoreBeatdown.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at JoshReed907. Well, 907. I always say 90 because that's just what we're used to saying. But it's 907.
The area code.
Yep.
The area code in Anchorage, Alaska, where you live. What's the temperature in Anchorage on this fine January night, January 15th, we're recording?
Right now, it's actually kind of warm given this time of year. It's 25 degrees Fahrenheit.
25 degrees. So not too much colder than here, honestly, in Baltimore. It's about that.
Yeah, we actually have some pretty bad wind storms.
Josh. I bet. Now, if you go north to Fairbanks, they really have to heat up their engines even to start their car, right?
Oh, yeah, because they're in like a giant
temperate there.
Yeah. So Fairbanks is basically a giant ball. So it gets like the coldest of the cold, like negative like 20, negative 40, and they get the hottest of the hot. Like you'll hear sometimes they'll reach up to like 100 degrees in Fairbanks. You're like 100 degrees in Alaska? Never heard of it. If you live in Fairbanks, you'll guess that you get the coldest of the cold and the hottest of the hot.
That is quite a range, certainly more than we get here in Baltimore. Let's talk what Ravens wide receivers here. And a lot of guys had some snaps for the Ravens. They expected it going into the season, I think, to be a position of strength. Groin injury, assorted injuries, maybe I should say, with Rashad Bateman coming out of camp. He didn't get going until late. The Ravens, you know, depended on veterans like Sammy Watkins, like Marquise Brown, of course, who was playing primarily and playing pretty well early in the season. And then they ended up where they did at the end of the year, frankly, with backup quarterbacks and offensive tackle limiting in a lot of ways what they could do at wide receiver. But let's just start going through these players one at a time here. And you're the guest. Who would you like to start with?
We could start with Mr. Hollywood Brown. I know that he's a bit of a hot button topic among a lot of Ravens fans right now. Like I said, he started off incredibly hot. I mean, the guy was on pace for, I think, like 1,300 yards or something crazy to start the season. And then he just, along with the team itself, you know, attrition kind of set in. And he went from averaging almost 100 yards a game to, I think he finished with like 63 yards a game. So it kind of really tailed off. Same with the rest of the team down the stretch.
Yeah, it was a lot worse than that for Brown, because his role on the team was changed dramatically. So early in the year, he was north of 10 yards a target for the beginning of the year. The last, I want to say it was 9 games, but I'm going to look it up right now because I want to get this right. Yeah, the last 9 games of the season, starting with the Miami game, where he had 13 targets for 37 yards, then 10 for 51, 7 for 55, 8 for 41, 14 for 43, 9 for 44, 8 for 28, and 8 for 27. He averaged 4.3 yards per target in those last 9 weeks of the season. So that was pretty darn – actually, yeah, 9 weeks of the season, he played 8 of those games. Just awful. Was getting tons of targets still. It just ended up being 5-yard throws, and some of them were complete. When he threw them longer, they generally did not complete them.
Yeah, I mean, it was really a tale of two halves for him. Like I said, earlier in the season, Lamar was really pushing the ball downfield. And I honestly think it was kind of a – I think his lack of pass protection kind of made him more skittish down the stretch, you know. So he was a little less reluctant to, you know, hold the ball a little longer, throw those balls, and to anybody except for Mark Andrews, you know. So I really think his trust in Hollywood kind of wavered, and his trust in his pass protection kind of wavered, and that adversity affected Hollywood's season. And then the drops too. He had some pretty bad drops starting with the Detroit mm-hmm. game, and then even to this very last game, he had a couple drops in there. And he could have easily had over 1,200 yards had it not been for some of those key drops, and then some of the, you know, changes that offense kind of went through as a progression.
Yeah, I think, you know, if he kept up his early season pace, he would have had a huge year. One of the biggest probably receiving years in Ravens history had he maintained his pace through that Minnesota game in what was that, week 8 or 9. And then, you know, things went very much south on him. Was catching a lot of balls north of 20 yards a catch, a lot of, you know, 40 plus yard balls, frankly. He had 3 40 plus yard TDs, another at 39. The last 9 weeks of the season, he only had 1 catch of 20 plus yards. And that's a lot of targets, folks, to have only 1 catch or 20-plus yards. And one of the problems was down the stretch, obviously Lamar was not having a good streak at the beginning of those games. But once Huntley took over and Johnson had time as well, I felt like Roman really had to scheme for the lack of pocket presence that Huntley had and was really forcing the ball out quickly by play design. So they would have either short to long reads or Andrews to short to long reads, as I call them, where the only guy he's really looking for any significant distance is Andrews. After that, it's 5-yard out to Brown, or it's some sort of pass behind the line of scrimmage asking Brown to make a play after with the run. So what they asked Brown to do in this offense, a lot different than his normal 9 route.
Yeah. It was definitely like just a completely like turn on its head, 180, if you will. I mean, I just can remember so many times, like, man, where was this early season Hollywood where they were really airing it out? And that's not really one of Kyle Huntley's strengths is the deep ball. There are a couple times where he had Marquise, you know, had a guy beat deep down the field, and he either just overthrew it or underthrew it. You know, if you go back to the Rams game, he underthrew it. Mm-hmm. You go back to the there was another throw he had just for a 2-minute warning against. Forget who it was a few weeks back where he missed them. I think it was against the same game against the Rams. Just for a 2-minute warning, and then he missed them. They could have saved the timeout, but it wasn't really Tyler Huntley's strength. And then you know Josh Johnson for one game. Only guy that's really getting the ball down deep down the field was Andrews.
Right. And really, that's the only guy they were looking for deep. Brown had a really good catch percentage to start off the season. Ended up okay, but not great in that category, particularly for the distance those balls were traveling. 91 out of 146 for the season. So I know that's under two-thirds, but let's just do that real quick. That's 62%, which really isn't what you want from a receiver. It's not terrible. There's a lot of guys who are deep ball threats who are in the 50s, but it's not what you want out of a guy who might be your number one receiver. You want a higher completion percentage and more average yards both. So a bummer of a year for Brown. Let's move on and talk a little bit about Rashad Bateman. And let's just start with any comments. Didn't get his first action until the Chargers game in Week 6.
Yeah, and what was it over under for Rashad? It was right around 500, right? His receiving yards.
I think with the injury early on, I was projecting him not to come back for about 3 more weeks, and I had him at 250 yards over-under, but
okay.
He easily cleared that at 515.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I loved what I saw from Rashad. I mean, considering what he had to battle back from. I mean, honestly, he wasn't, in my opinion, he wasn't targeted enough. He finished with 68 targets and 46 catches, but I feel like there were, like, it was such a weird thing. They would start off the games, like, with him, like, target him early, and then he'd get to, like, one to no targets in the second half. And I was like, I don't understand that. Like, you know, you target Rashad, like, first drive two or three times, catch, first down, and then you kind of just go away from it. I guess the Cleveland game, second Cleveland game, was a bit different from that. You know, they were kind of airing it out a little bit more. He kind of got consistent targets. But that was like the only game where he had the same amount of targets in the first half as he did in the second half. So I definitely think that they kind of shied away from him in times that they shouldn't. And then he had opportunities where, you know, he was open, I felt like, quite often, and they just weren't going his direction. They either forcing it to Andrews or just didn't see him.
Right. I agree. I mean, the X receiver got a little bit taken out of the game, period, because there was some rolling with Huntley they did to the right primarily. They didn't keep him exclusively in the pocket. When you roll right, you often take that X receiver out of the game if he's deep on that left side. And of course, he's tethered. But if he goes deep, then you probably do not have him as a reasonable option. He has to cross the field to make a play. It can happen if the play is extended. Roman scheme and frankly Huntley's abilities and the tackle's abilities were not allowing for extended plays down the stretch. That's something Lamar could do, but obviously they had a lot of trouble with Bateman. Bateman's hands had been a big issue at Minnesota, and we did see some issues with that in this season. He had a couple drops, but more importantly, he had a couple balls that went off his hands for interceptions.
Yeah, those are the plays that you can't have as reliable of a chain mover as he was, especially to start off. It's just like, you know, those other plays. When you're on a team that's so banged up as the Ravens, you know, were for majority of the season, you know, you almost have to play a perfect game just to keep up with teams. So you can't have those, you know, those errors where you have balls, you know, tip balls and overthrows that usually end up in the hands of the other team. So, like I said, if he cleans that part of his game up, which you know, he did, you know, a better job of down the stretch. Like, you know, he had a lot of those tips and stuff, you know, early on when he first got back, but he could really clean it up down the stretch.
Yeah, a guy who the offense did depend on in terms of a fair percentage of the targets down the stretch. There's still more were going to Brown and still more to Andrews, but he got the most wide receiver snaps in a number of games down the stretch, which means a couple of things. First of all, that they believe in his durability and his ability to play more snaps, but second of all, they probably liked him as a blocker better than Brown, so they had him on for, you know, more. Yeah. Run snaps.
Yeah, he actually had some pretty good, nice downfield blocks, especially on some QB runs. The last game in particular, he had two nice ones for Huntley on quarterback keepers and scrambles.
Yeah, I'm happy with that part of his game, certainly, and we hope that some of the other things they'll have a chance to chance to improve. And honestly, I think that we have not seen what Rashad Bateman can be as a route runner all the way without having Lamar Jackson in for any significant amount of his playing time to really lead him on a lot of throws. And so he was certainly better in those early games when Lamar was around and really looked like the real deal at that point up through that first Cleveland game. But after that, didn't look particularly great. A lot of that, unfortunately, is not on him in terms of the offense changing and making him less of a target.
Yeah, like I said, the offense as a whole, but the receiver position in particular, really kind of struggled down the stretch. And I don't, like I said, a lot of it was no fault of their own. You know, it's just like you said, the opponent you were playing, the quarterback you were playing with. You know, we don't have number eight out there. It's really a difference. And then I feel like the time missed between from Lamar having COVID in training camp, from Rashad having his injury in training camp, and Marquise missed a good chunk of training camp too. It didn't seem to affect Marquise to start the season, but as far as Rashad, that chemistry between him and Lamar just wasn't quite as it was. I think this offseason is going to be really huge for all three of those guys to get on the same page.
Be nice if they could get time together and you know, be uninjured and get some practice time together. Lamar seems to want to do that. All of the receivers still need positional training. You know, they still benefit from that. And I said this more about the inside linebackers because I really don't want to see workout videos about Patrick Queen. I know he's going to work out. I'm really not concerned about that part of his game. I want him to get the positional training necessary to clean up his tackling, clean up his block shedding, figure some things out about coverage, both downhill and behind him. And Bateman, you know, needs time on a jugs gun. He needs time still to practice his craft at the top of the route and make sure that that's honed to an NFL level. So there's certainly coaches you can work with on that during the offseason.
Oh yeah, yeah. They hired one of the best ones in the business, and Keith yes. Williams and Keith Williams. So I'm not sure, now that he's a part of the staff, I'm not sure how like the rules work as far as being able to contact with the players in the offseason. You know, so that might be making it a little tricky. He might have to, you know, just like maybe send him home with a route book or, you know, give him some stuff to work on individually and have his own coach. But who knows?
I think he gets his own coaching guru, and you know, there's something to be said, I think, for having a different coach during the offseason than your regular season coach, and you layer on some learning. Hopefully, you don't erase learning that your primary coaches, whether it's the OC or the quarterback's coach, for example, want you to learn. But I think Josh Harris certainly had a positive impact on Lamar, and I don't think that it's too wrong to have two different ways to learn how to do things.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say you can never have too many voices, but it's always good to have, not necessarily contrasting voices, but like, you know, like a second opinion, like, you know, like another person who may not see things, you know, as good as Keith Williams is and has proven he can be with some of the best in the business. You never know if he knows a guy who might, you know, be better at working with, you know, young receivers on owning that part of their craft. So you never know.
All right, the third receiver, let's move on and talk about Sammy Watkins a little bit. A guy brought in for $5 million this year, and honestly, just on a one-year prove-it deal, I think there is really no chance he'll return to the Ravens. He only had three targets in the last 5 weeks of the season. None of them completes, so no catches. Didn't end up with a particularly good year in terms of yards per target. Did have a few big plays for the Ravens, and I don't want to totally slough off, hand wave away what he did for the Ravens in those first 5 weeks of the season when he was really helping the team. But did not do much down the stretch, and that, you know, starting from that fateful Miami game where the Ravens season really started to turn south, he did not do much at all.
Yeah, I mean, that Miami game, I mean, if he catches that touchdown, that's a difference. If he doesn't fumble the ball, even though I thought that was kind of bang bang, if that doesn't happen, then you never know how that game turns out. But I mean the Ravens didn't even, like, his $5 million wasn't even fully guaranteed. It really was worth up to $5 million. So it's like, I mean, it was like a 1 year flyer thing. Provided some good veteran leadership. He performed well in training camp, and it got a lot of people excited, thinking that, you know, not necessarily that his injury woes would be behind him, but that, you know, he could provide something to the receiver room. And he was, like you said, he was pretty clutch in those first couple of weeks. You know, we don't win that Detroit game without him, without that fourth and with a 29-26. You know, the same doesn't come down with that ball.
Yeah, fourth and 19. Yeah.
Fourth and 19. And then the Chicago game, he picks up that big conversion for Huntley. So, I mean, he made – He made the big plays that they signed him for. They didn't sign him expecting him to put up 500 yards or 1,000 yards or even 500 yards. But they wanted him to provide that veteran presence, that big game, you know, being able to, like, you know, I wouldn't say playoff Sammy because he didn't make the playoffs, but that clutch factor that some of the younger receivers were lacking or were unproven.
Okay, well, I mean, that's a fair point. It looks like to me he did earn $5 million this year, by the way.
Oh, he did?
I'm just looking at this. The OTC number has him as $1.25 million of base salary with $3.75 million of prorated bonus. The cap number is $5 million for the year. So I don't know if there maybe was something he didn't collect because he didn't make a level and there's some refund to the Ravens. I'm really not sure, but it looks like to me he earned $5 million. It's a signing, I think. In retrospect, you got to look at it, and I hope some Ravens fans will, and say, look, these free agent signings, they don't tend to be value signings. And when I say that, I mean it's the intermediate dollar ones and the high dollar ones. Those are the ones where you don't always get value. And Sammy Watkins at $5 million was not a value for the Ravens. I don't think there's any way I can twist it into being that. A lot of the $1 million players they got, on the other hand, whether that's Bynes or trying to think of other players they got for $1 million,
Houston,
you know, was $1 million with some additional Ellis, certainly, are guys that do end up, you know, being an important piece at that price. And I think that Watkins was an unfortunate non-factor. And I think the Ravens, as soon as they started to really pile up injuries and they were even that much tighter on cap, probably regretted the Watkins signing.
Yeah, and I really feel like it kind of got in the way of some of the progress that a lot of the young receivers were making and the promise that they showed. James Proche in particular, who I want to talk about next. I feel like I've written recent weeks, I've written about how Rashad Bates was being underutilized. There's nobody on this team has been underutilized more than James Proche. I mean, it's crazy. The guy sets new career highs almost every time he steps on the field, and then he's inactive for the couple games. I don't understand it. The guy's clutch. He moves the chains, and I just feel like I feel like James Proche should have been active for every game this year as long as he was healthy. And if that meant benching Sammy for a week because, you know, he wasn't producing, then so be it.
Made all the sense in the world to bench Sammy down the stretch. He wasn't part of the 2022 plans, still isn't, and a player like Proche is. And it's very important the Ravens figure out what they have. James Proche will be a third-year player next year. He almost starts the camp on the bubble. One more year, he will be on the bubble to start camp because you don't have any future value you're buying into. You only have that current year value. So going into year three, it just makes sense to know more about what Proche was. The other reason why I like Proche better than Watkins is his style fit the slants and all the quick routes that they wanted to run down the stretch here. And I know, you know, they have other guys who can play in the slot, and Watkins is more of an X and they can use him there. But it was an option to use him, and I think they would have gotten more value from him in those last few games with Huntley running some of the routes he didn't. When he did play, he played very well.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, especially like on some of those like gotta have it downs. I mean, the guy averaged like 10.1 yards per target. So like that, I mean, that, I wouldn't say that doesn't tell you everything you need to know, but he's averaging 14.4 yards a catch and 10.1 yards, a target. That's a guy who knows what his sticks are, who knows where to be for his quarterback. And there are a lot of times where he would even pluck some of the, you know, dirt balls off the ground, go down and make a tough catch, go up and make a tough catch. I mean, the things that he was flashing in training camp in the preseason, you know, the latter half of the preseason, you know, he displayed when he was on the field and got the opportunity. He just didn't get enough opportunities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, 80% catch rate obviously is central to that outstanding yards per target number, but you don't ever have to apologize for pointing to yards per target. It's the single most important receiving stat, and it's why I quote it for basically every receiver.
Highest among all receivers on the team. Highest among all receivers.
Yeah. It's just 20 targets is the sample size is the problem with it. It's not the yards per target. And we had the entire team was off to an amazing start in terms of yards per target through about those first 5 weeks through the Indianapolis game. And then things started to unravel a little bit with lower yards per target numbers. All right. Who do we still need to talk about? We still got
Devin Duvernay
to talk about.
Mr. All Pro. All Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. All-Pro returner. Another guy who I feel like was really underutilized, and he could have had – he finished with 2 touchdowns, could have had 3 had Blake Cleveland held his block against Aaron Donald, but that's easier said than done. Devin Duvernay is a guy who I feel like, you know, needs a bigger role in this offense, who could have benefited from more – more snaps and more targets out, you know, instead of Sammy Watkins. Like I said, I want to just keep banging on Sammy, but I really feel like him being active and up was in the game at times was a detriment to the development of the young receivers. Like, even though we already know what kind of talent we have in Devin Duvernay, because, you know, he's good for explosive plays every time he touches the ball, just about. But it's just the fact that he didn't, like I said, like Prochet didn't get enough opportunities. And then so I feel like his yards per target, I think it was only like, 5.8. But that was because I think they're throwing more screens his direction and trying to get him stuff behind the line of scrimmage, or, you know, at the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage, trying to get him going. Similar to what they did with Hollywood, with Duvernay, like, it's in some of those the shovel passes where, like, you know, the little jet passes, they'll count it as mm-hmm. some of those counted as receptions. And even though they only went for 4 or 5 yards, that still was detrimental to his yards per target. So.
Yeah, I don't know that there's really – they have to be a failure or whatnot, but certainly the Ravens' run game probably held Duvernay back on some of his ability to get open in the middle of the field, to do damage after the catch in the middle of the field, and even on the jet motion type plays. You know, obviously, if the opposing defenses had to respect the Ravens' running backs at all, then it would have been a lot better for the receivers, for Jackson to run himself, and for Jackson to extend plays and make plays off schedule.
Yeah, because everybody was clamoring, myself included. Right. Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, everybody was clamoring for Duvernay to get, you know, use him at Deebo Samuels, Well, the reason that Deebo Samuels is, you know, one, he's a whole different breed of athlete, and also other opposing teams have to respect the Niners running backs. You got to respect Elijah Mitchell, Trey Sermon, and those guys who can actually threaten you from out of the backfield. A lot of the times, Ravens running backs weren't really threatening like that. Now, don't get me wrong, Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray showed some juice at times, but those were few and far between.
Yeah, and very few and far between. I mean, basically those guys, in particular Murray, who didn't really show up until the last week of the season, was a problem. The Ravens, more than that, they just didn't have an outside speed threat. Tyson Williams would have been the guy. He's the fastest back they have. He also happens to probably be the most efficient tackle breaker of the group. For whatever reasons that are not visible to us, never gained the coach's favor in terms of getting an opportunity to play after looking pretty damn good when he was out there. He, by the way, averaged 9.3 yards per reception this year, which certainly is not terrible for a running back. I'm trying to see what he did in terms of rushing this year, but I know he didn't have many opportunities the entire season.
Yeah, after the first half of the Vegas game, they just went to the doghouse.
Yeah. Yeah, 5.3 yards per carry, and he only had 2 carries after week 7, and that's not going to do it, obviously. But he had the fumble in against Las Vegas that got picked up for the touchdown. Actually, I think it was against Kansas City, right?
Kansas City, yeah.
The touchdown by Duvernay, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was an unfortunate thing that probably set him back. But I something tells me that it was probably something about the response to being told you can't fumble the football. That's more what they bothered him. And I've talked about this on other shows, but at least what I like about Tyson Williams is the fact that they didn't cut him after one season is an indication, or during his first season, is an indication that they think he's got too much talent to cut. So there's no reason to keep him on your roster, activate him every week, unless you're actually going to use him in 2022.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it may have just been like a emergency back stash kind of thing. Prove yourself on special teams kind of thing. But, It's unfortunate. You know, I was writing about it just about every week until I just decided to stop.
Yeah, that's how it kind of was with Patrick Queen too. There's just a point at which you just don't want to pile on anymore, and you know, things aren't working, or they were working for a while, and then it's fun to write about. But then, you know, nobody wants to read negative stuff about certain players or you know, about things that aren't working. Let's move on. Tylan Wallace got some play at the end of the year. I thought played pretty well on special teams. He certainly had his moments. Got 6 targets at the end of the year with a couple catches. Looked like he had a little bit of juice after the catch. Certainly wasn't perfect before the catch. Had Sam Cook's first career incompletion. I believe that's still true in that Week 18 game.
Yeah. I mean, it was a kind of a bit of a tough game. He kind of had to go back for it, and I think that was a play he got injured on too. Didn't come back in the game after that. He was, as I said, primarily special teams player. He's a pretty good gunner. There are a lot of times he downed some of the Cook's punts inside the 20. So I wouldn't say he was like, you know, Chris Moore 2.0, but he was pretty good on special teams. He was active for all 17 games, so that shows you know the kind of onus the Ravens put on special teams to value him in that phase of the game. But I definitely agree with you as far as him showing some juice. He only had two catches. One went for 5 yards. I think that was his first catch, the diving grab he had against Green Bay, and the second one was that nice 18-yarder against the Bengals, where he caught it well short of the sticks, broke a couple tackles, and then showed some nice juice after the catch. And he's another guy who I would have liked to see. I mean, he did get more playing time as the year went on, especially down the stretch. Yeah. But he's another guy where I felt like, you know, maybe decrease some of Sammy's workload a bit and then get him on the field some more. And then there were times where he was actually wide open and just didn't get targeted.
But by the time they decided to get Wallace on the field, they were at a point where they just weren't using their X receiver at all. They used Bateman a little bit, but they didn't use the other guys at all. And so they had Watkins off the field at the end of the year. In fact, Watkins had some, I want to say, at about 37 snaps total the last three games. One game he only had 3 snaps coming off COVID, and then I thought he might have had 14 and 20 in the other two, or it's thereabouts. And even when they did get Wallace on the field, and Wallace might have had 50 snaps over that same period, they still weren't throwing the ball to the X receiver very much. It wasn't part of the offensive game plan because of how difficult it was to keep Huntley standing in the pocket and not looking Andrews, second read quickly, get rid of the football no matter what. It did not seem to be part of the plan. And I'm not criticizing the Ravens game plan down the stretch. They had to deal with a lot of crap personnel. You're not having your running backs, having your second string quarterbacks, and having two tackles who are, you know, one who's not doing the job at all, and the other who's struggling like hell to do the job on the right side is not where you want to be. And obviously they had to make a lot of concessions to those personnel groups.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm excited for the potential of Tylan Wallace heading into year two. I don't think he's going to, you know, burst onto the scene or by any means, but I definitely think the James Proche-esque role for him next year, you know, just a slight uptick, nothing really huge.
So the much beloved Miles Boykin had, I believe, 2 targets this year. Though one of them might have been wiped out by penalty later in the year, but he had
Pro Football Reference
a catch against the Chargers for.
Yeah, I was just going to say Pro Football Reference has him 1 target, 1 reception, 6 yards.
Right, that was back in the Chargers game. I think there's another play he got chewed out for later in the year. It was in the corner of the end zone, and Harbaugh actually, you know, was talking to him on the sideline. You could pick him up, and it's obvious exactly what he's saying. It's saying basically, you got to come back for the football and make that catch. Don't let that defender get in there and make a play on the football. And it was right in the corner of the end zone. It might have been against Cincinnati. Might have been one of the other games late, where he had an opportunity to make a play, didn't do it, and. And I don't doubt that has really hurt him. He'll go into year 4, Miles will, as a fourth-year player. And there's a lot of reasons to believe that he might be cut, that he won't be around. But the first is that in terms of salary, they can save some cap. And it's about $2.75 million is his cap number next year, and $2.54 of that can be saved. He has a little bit of prorated bonus still, but he had some escalators he earned, and so his base salary is $2.54 next year, and that can be saved if the Ravens cut him. I think they're going to really have a hard time keeping him in year 4, though he may come to camp. It's possible Powers is in a similar boat, might get traded. Either of them could agree to a lower salary, I guess, to stay with the Ravens. I don't think either of them – well, I don't think Boykin is likely to stay with the Ravens at that number.
Yeah, I don't even know if Bateman would be – I mean, not Bateman. Boykin would be even like a tradable asset at this point. You know, we're talking about a guy mm-hmm. who barely played this past season, who by many people's metrics outside of, you know, the Ravens, has underwhelmed. You know, I remember watching the Packers game and watching Alan Lazard do his thing, you know, both as a blocking receiver and as a, you know, primary pass, a secondary pass catcher to Devontae Adams. Now, like, that's what the Ravens want Miles Boykin to be. You know, a guy who can not just block his ass off, but also, you know, catch the ball and contribute in the passing game as well. So, I think Boykin would benefit from a fresh start. I just don't think at this point he'd be worth anything more than a conditional 7th round pick, if that.
Oh, I don't believe they'll get anything for him with a $2.54 million salary. If they negotiated to lower, then they could possibly trade him. But there's no way with that salary that anybody's picking that up. So they'll look to they'll wait for him to be cut, and other teams will then put in not waiver claims on him, but they'll call him on the phone and try and get him to sign a contract at a lower value. So anyway, frustrating. I mean, there's a lot of Miles Boykin lovers in Baltimore, and it unfortunately didn't work out. It's just one of those selections that got away from the Ravens. What do you look for them to do? Because we mentioned a couple guys in terms of Watkins and Boykin, who I don't think either of us believes will be here next year.
Nope.
So who do you think the Ravens go into 2022 with?
So Hollywood, of course, Bateman, of course, Duvernay, of course, Prochet, so that's four. Wallace, that's five. So, I mean, I could see them adding either another guy, you know, in the draft. They have, like, what, like a million fourth-round picks. I could see them adding, you know, a guy no higher than – I mean, if there's a guy with a high value somewhere, like, you know, in late day two, maybe. But I most likely don't see them spending no higher than a fourth-round pick on a receiver if they go that route. And then probably – I won't say another Sammy Watkins-type deal for a veteran, but it might, you know, bring in a couple – bring a couple of vets. They do have some guys on the practice squad, you know, from this past, you know, Benjamin Victor and some of the other guys.
Benjamin Victor.
Some of those guys might get a second shot, might get a sniff. He's training camp bodies for sure. But as far as like their approach towards the offseason, I mean, this position group isn't as in dire straits as it's been projected in the past. I mean, they have talent. Eric DaCosta, you know, he put the reverse Ozzie Newsome. He's invested some really high draft capital at this position group, and it's starting to pay off dividends. I mean, Hollywood Brown, as much as, you know, we maligned him second half of the stretch, he still put up career highs across the board, went over 1,000 yards. Ravens have had a 1,000-yard receiver since Mike Wallace. So, and he wasn't even homegrown. Last homegrown receiver went over 1,000 yards with Torrey Smith in 2014. So, like I said, this position group is, I wouldn't necessarily call it a strength, but it's no longer a glaring weakness.
Okay, that's fair enough. And there's always a lot of people who look at the receiving group, particularly the folks on Twitter, and are very excited by any free agent receiver that becomes available. I want you to remember the Sammy Watkins signing here as being the kind of one that the Ravens could be able to afford, because any big name wide receiver, they can't afford, not with their other needs. They've got way too many other things to do with their money than to be piddling around with a $10 or $12 million receiver. So the best they're going to do in terms of dollars spent, I mean, the most they're going to do, not the best, is about $5 million. And I don't think there's one of those signings coming. I think there could be a vet minimum guy coming if they really like him as a combination of a special teams or some specialist receiving role, or there could be just another draft pick, and they fight it out that way, and they work through the season using the practice squad as needed.
Yeah, only guy like Orc, you know, that might go the cap casualty route if somebody gets cut. But I guess the only guy, like, as far as impending free agents that I might like, because I liked him a lot last year around the, you know, free agency time, is Rashard Higgins for the Browns. He's a guy who's been underutilized for the Browns for a long time. Mm-hmm. Nice, good possession receiver. His nickname is Hollywood too. Also, like I said, he's a guy I've liked for a while, and for some reason he's been really underutilized in Cleveland, even after they traded away Odell Beckham. It was kind of just Donovan Peoples-Jones or tight end down there for them. So I think he might be fed up with the Browns. And, you know, if the Ravens want to give him a sniff, I wouldn't mind that at all. Otherwise, it's probably the draft.
Yeah, so Higgins, we're certainly talking about a number that's not going to be extraordinarily large. Nope. But maybe he's a guy you get not too much above the vet minimum, or maybe you get him for 2 years and a premium to that minimum of $1 million total over that period. I would certainly hope he's not going to be a $3 to $5 million guy, because that's the point at which I probably got to say no on that one.
Yeah, no, he just be like a rotational piece kind of guy.
Okay, last guy I want to talk about is last thing I want to talk about is Brown's impending fifth-year option that will come up in, I think it's May. They have to decide on it. Maybe before then, maybe before the draft. I'm not really honestly sure, but they have to decide on it. It'll be in the $13 million range that they'll have to pay him for year five. And remember, he's just entering year four, and the way the mechanics of this work out is that before his fourth season, you got to buy into his fifth season and guarantee that money. I don't know that the Ravens, it's a slam dunk that the Ravens do this.
Yeah, honestly, I don't either. I'm leaning towards more yes than no. But I said I'm not sure when the deadline is. It's probably before the draft. So I don't know. I feel like if Lamar goes to the table for him, they'll definitely consider it. You know, just because that's kind of like Lamar's guy at the position and on the team outside of Andrews. Like I said, I'm currently on the fence about. Like, I know he just put up career high numbers, and if we can get that guy we saw for the first 8 weeks for an entire season, then you know, sign me up for that. But even then, it's just I feel like at this, there's so many good receivers that come on the draft each year that I don't think you necessarily need to, keep all your first round guys if that first round guy is like a world class talent.
Yeah, if they're going to do it, they have to. They're almost committing to sign him long term because you don't want him for 1 year at $13 million. You might want him for 3 years for $45 million building up, but you don't want him for 1 year at $13 million. And I'm not sure the Ravens are down for that. I think that's a really big commitment. It's a cornerstone contract, obviously, we were talking about. You only get to have about six or eight of those on the whole team, and you got to pick them carefully. Maybe Brown is a guy you do that for, and maybe he isn't. I am leaning towards they probably do it, but I think the pick definitely comes with some baggage, and part of that baggage may be how they have to say goodbye to Hollywood and how that affects their relationship with Lamar. So maybe for that reason, as you mentioned, this is a reason they do it.
Yeah.
All right. Josh, great having you on. We're trying to keep these shows a little bit short. Is there anything else about the receiver group you want to talk about before we let this go?
No. We pretty much hit all the bases. Just give my guy James Porcher some more chances, man. The guy produces every time he gets on the field. So just, I'd like to see him get more opportunities to get out there next year.
All right, me too. And I'm surprised that Prochet had the kind of year he did, even in limited targets. I mean, he seemed like a very traditional Ravens camp darling, but ended up being much more than that, a very reliable receiver for the time he was in there. Tell folks, once again, their Twitter handle?
JoshReed907.
All right. So that can be kind of difficult to find. You have to kind of really type the whole thing in. There's a lot of Josh Reeds out there, but this is the one you want to follow for Ravens content. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short anytime this offseason, if you have a particular passion you'd like to talk about that is narrow in focus, always want to do that so we can go fairly deep on it, contact me. Twitter DMs are open. Love to talk to you about it at some point on a show this offseason. If you have graphs you want to show, statistical analysis, a study you've done, anything like that, all fair game. Again, love to hear from you. We can do a video episode if it warrants it. Contact me anyway again via Twitter. Josh, thanks again for coming on for this episode.
Thanks for having me, kid.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.